Hare Krishna. So welcome to our Saturday evening Bhagavad Gita class. We have just finished the second chapter last time and we are going to begin with the third chapter. So as we do every time before the lecture, we will chant the verses together. Three is called Karma Yoga, in which Lord Krishna outlines the art of performing work for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. Atha Tritiyodhyayah. We will today commence discussion on chapter 3, which is entitled Karma Yoga. In the second chapter, Lord Krishna has given many instructions to Arjuna. He has described the nature of the soul. He has contrasted the soul with the body. He has described Sankhya Yoga, that is the analytical study of matter and spirit, by which one can distinguish between the eternal and the temporary. And this kind of discrimination must be done by all those who have human body. That means by all of us. We must always be conscious of the acts that we are performing, knowing fully well that we are responsible fully for all our actions and that the reactions will follow, and therefore we must only perform such acts as are for our real welfare. Even after having described many instructions, Arjuna's mind has not become clear. Lord Krishna has used the word Buddhi Yoga in the second chapter, which actually means Bhakti Yoga, which means to engage one's mind, one's senses, one's body, one's everything in the service of Lord Krishna. The word buddhi literally also means intelligence. Therefore, Arjuna is a little confused, and this chapter begins with Arjuna's confusion. So for those of you who are a little more academically inclined and who want to study the Bhagavad Gita in a little bit of depth, I will try to outline the summary of the third chapter in terms of the 43 verses. Arjuna's confusion is presented in the first two verses. Then from verses 3 to 9, Krishna will explain Karma Yoga, which is the art of work. Work is also an art. We have to learn how to perform. And this Karma Yoga is work that is performed for the satisfaction and pleasure of the Supreme Lord. After that, from text 10 to 16, Krishna will be describing the principle of yajna or sacrifice. That is, duties that are enjoined in the Vedas for us to perform, by performing which we can rise from the material to the spiritual platform. Because every one of us has prescribed duties to perform. But we must perform these prescribed duties according to the prescription of the scriptures. That is the important point. From text 17 to 29, Lord Krishna explains that the purpose of performing all these different duties as enjoined in the scriptures is to attain to the point of self-realization. Then one may think that one has already achieved self-realization. Then what is the need for us to perform these duties? One can give up. So Krishna describes in these verses from 17 to 29 that even though one may be a self-realized person, one may have come to the highest platform of spiritual life, but still one performs these prescribed duties just to set an example to the world at large. Because of those who are spiritually elevated, they do not act in a way that is within the power of the people at large to understand. Then because of this misunderstanding, people will try to imitate artificially, and that will create havoc in society. So Lord Krishna explains how important it is for one to perform one's prescribed duties according to one's situation, whatever may be one's spiritual level of advancement. And then in text 30 to 35, Lord Krishna concludes the discussion on Karma Yoga and urges Arjuna to fight by surrendering to Lord Krishna. Finally, in text 36, Arjuna asks a question as to why people act in sinful ways, in bad ways, when they know that such activity is wrong. It's a very important question for us, because I am sure that all of us have experience. All of us have experienced that we know that we should not be doing something. It's not correct. It's wrong. If we have some concept of sin and piety, then we may think in these terms. But even if we don't understand sin and piety, still there is something that tells us that I should not be doing this. Because if I was doing it openly, would I have done this act? I would not have. So if we imagine that there are people watching us, then perhaps we would not have done it. So the fact that all of us would like to do certain activities which may not be known to others means that we are performing certain activities knowing fully well that we should not be doing them, but still we do them. And Arjuna's question is, why? Why is one forced to perform sometimes activities that one knows one should not be doing? Actually, many times in life we do things because we think people are not watching, isn't it? Are we right? But if we knew that there are witnesses to every act we perform, then we will become very cautious. There is that story of the children in the Gurukul, and they were about to pass out. Of course, those days they did not have SSLC, neither they had so much donation system to enter into college. So students were very happy. And in one Gurukul, the teacher decided to test all the students, and he gave all of them an apple. And he said, you go and eat this apple in a place where no one can see you. And after you have eaten, then you come back and talk to me. So all the students went away in different places. One student was very hungry, so he went right behind the hut, started eating. He thought no one could see him. Another one went into the forest, another into a cave, another under a tree, another climbed up a tree. So different boys went in different directions. And they all started coming back gradually one by one. Only one boy did not come back all day. And at the end of the day, fag end of the day, he came back very tired, looking very dejected, very sad, with his head hanging as if in shame. And he still had the apple. So the guru asked him, what happened? Why did you not eat this apple? He said, I did not find any place where no one was watching me. The guru said, well, all your friends have found places like that. He says, it's not possible. Wherever I went, the trees were watching, the birds were watching, the insects were watching. God was watching ultimately. So I could not find any place where I was not watched. So the guru was very happy with his answer. He embraced this child and said, among all my students, it is only you who have really understood my teachings. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is described that there are so many witnesses, 13 witnesses to every action we do. There is the sun, there is the moon, there are the demigods, there are the demigods who are in charge of different things in the universe. And then ultimately there is God who is seated in our heart. What can you hide from God? He knows everything. Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutanam yantrarudhani mayaya. Lord Krishna says, I am seated in the heart of all living beings and I am directing the wanderings of all. So seated in our heart, he sees our desire. Yes, this person wants to do such and such act which is not correct, and the person wants to be away from everyone, so not to be seen. So then Lord Krishna gives intelligence. Yes, there is a nice hiding place. Go into that cave. So Krishna is directing the wanderings based upon our desire in the heart. So this all important question is going to be discussed by Krishna in the last part of the chapter, from text 36 to 43. This is the overall summary of the third chapter. So what is the nature of Arjuna's confusion as we begin the third chapter? Arjuna has been told by Krishna, Durena Hivaram Karma Buddhi Yoga Dhananjaya. My dear Arjun, by the process of Buddhi Yoga, keep a long distance from all abominable or sinful activities. Stay away from sin by the performance of bhakti. This in essence is what Lord Krishna wants to tell Arjun. The word Buddhi Yoga means bhakti yoga. But because the word Buddhi literally also means intelligence, so Arjuna is confused. He is thinking that by linking my intelligence in the Supreme, I should try to keep away from abominable action, that is killing my own relatives. So in other words, Arjuna thinks that practicing Buddhi Yoga means to avoid fighting in the war. So Arjuna is thinking, Lord Krishna is telling me to do Buddhi Yoga, to use my intelligence and link it with Him, and at the same time He is telling me to fight. This appears to be contradictory. Lord Krishna is giving me two contradictory instructions. So Arjuna seems a little bewildered. And therefore, he begins by asking this question to Lord Krishna. So kindly chant after me. Arjuna uvacha jayasi chet karmanaste mata buddhir janardana tatkim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi keshava. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna said, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Lord Krishna has so many wonderful names like Janardhan, Keshava, and so on. Does anyone know the meanings of these names? What is the meaning of Keshava? Yes, one who killed Keshi, Asur. Keshi was an Asur friend of Kamsa. And he came disguised in the form of a huge horse. And Lord Krishna very easily killed this demon. And the place at which he killed is called Keshi Ghat in Vrindavan. And what is the meaning of Janardhan? Janardhan means one who destroys the atheistic people or the miscreants. It also means one who relieves the distress of people at large. So both these refer to Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna has so many names, unlimited names. And depending on the various activities he performs and the qualities he has, his devotees address him by all these different names. Just like sometimes in the house people may be given pet names, nicknames, according to their different qualities or their activities. Or some great man, you know, in military, in warfare or in sports, may be called lion or tiger or something. If a wrestler, he may be called lion, something like that. So according to the kind of qualities that he's performing, he's called by these various names. Actually, God has no name, but he is given names by his devotees. So very lovingly, Krishna is being addressed by Arjuna, O Keshav, O Janardhan, please tell me that you have on one hand asked me or told me that intelligence is superior to fruitive activity, and now you are asking me to engage in this warfare? I am confused. I don't understand. Tat kim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi Keshava. Then why are you asking me to engage in such fruitive activity like killing people, for which one will get ghastly reactions? When intelligence is superior, then work. So in this question, Arjuna has misconceived the idea of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. He thinks basically that Buddhi Yoga or spiritual life means inaction. It means that you restrain yourself from all kinds of activities, and this is not something uncommon. In today's world also we find that people think that if you are in spiritual life or if you are in renounced life, then they say, oh, that means there must be no activity for all of you. People generally think that devotees who stay in the temple have lots of time, that they have no work to do, there's plenty of time. After all, they only have to chant a bit, little bit bhajan, little kirtan they do, and they have plenty of time to do everything else. Because after all, spiritual life means you have given up work. Some other people think that spiritual life means retirement from work. That now, no more I have to work, I can be lazy. So people use sometimes the excuse of spiritual life to become lazy. Or they think that such other people who are in spiritual life are lazy, and this is a very common misconception, because actually there are such people who take to spiritual life for the sake of dal roti. Actually, since Lord Krishna is maintaining all the animals and birds in the forest, they don't have to go to work, they don't have to go for their business. So really the struggle for existence should not be so hard. It is only the human being who has to struggle so hard for work. There is no need to work so hard. All we need to do is to have 8 hours of work, depend on the Lord, and be satisfied with what comes as a result of that. But people are not satisfied. They think that by excessively working hard, they are going to get more and more, but they don't understand that in this hard work, they are actually performing so many sinful acts that is going to incur so many powerful reactions that it is going to more than nullify whatever benefits they may get from the extra work they are doing. One time I was in a rickshaw and the rickshawala was cheating me, and he charged me 10 rupees extra. So, you see, these days very difficult to be a sadhu, because if you are cheated and you argue, then people say you are a sadhu, you should not fight. But they don't think that if you think I am a sadhu, then you should not cheat me either. That they don't think. So they want you to do your part of the work, but they will not do their part of the work. So I said, alright, you are taking 10 rupees extra and you are trying to manipulate your meter or whatever you have done. Well, sadhus are not fools necessarily. They understand But understand one thing, that you are getting 10 extra rupees by cheating someone, but very soon, because of this cheating, you will lose 100 rupees because of this act. And you will not even know that it is because of this. So what is the net gain or loss for you? You have lost 90 rupees. So I said, consider. So he became so frightened, he didn't take any money from me. He gave me a free ride in the rickshaw. So in this way, people, they think that by working hard and working extra, they can earn more money. But they don't realize that whatever is to come will come. You can't change your income, or you can't change the happiness that you have to receive even by one penny, by one ounce. Whatever is destined by your past karma is going to come. So might as well be satisfied with that. Rest happy with what Providence gives us. This is the secret of happiness. Not to struggle against one's karma. Even if one manages to earn extra. One time one businessman was arguing with me. Well, he said, you are telling me to keep my shop open for 8 hours. But when I keep my shop open for extra 4 hours, then I get more business. So I'm earning more. So how do you say that I don't earn more? Well, the answer is very simple. Number one, whatever business was due to come to you in those 8 hours will now be spread out over those 12 hours. Very simple. So earlier that job would have been done in 8 hours, but because you have decided to stay for extra 4 hours, so what does God do? He spreads over the business. So He gives you less business throughout, and then you end up working harder in those 4 hours, and you get the same amount of money. And eventually, even if you get more money than you would have in those 8 hours, but some other problems will come in life or in business which will take away much more money from you than what you have earned in those extra hours of work, which you otherwise could have gainfully used in the service of God. People do not realize that the customer is sent to the businessman by God. The patient is sent to the doctor by God. Everyone receives one's income, one's business, one's means of livelihood because it is being sent by God, not simply by one's own hard endeavor. This is a very important point. Therefore, one must rest content with what destiny provides. If it is to be taken away, it will be taken away. If it is to be given, it will be given by destiny. I never tire of telling of the story of one businessman who was a great devotee in Jaipur. He was a devotee of Govindaji. There is a very famous temple in Jaipur, for those of you who are familiar. And most of the residents of Jaipur, or at least many, many, every morning they visit the temple of Lord Govindaji for darshan. And they never begin their work, their day's work, till they have taken darshan. This is a beautiful culture, that you don't begin your day until you have seen the Lord. The most auspicious way of beginning your day. So every morning he would come for Mangal Arati, which is early morning, I believe at 5 o'clock. And at that time when you go there, you will see hundreds of people rushing, even old people, everyone running. Very surprising sight. And after the Mangal Arati is over, again the streets are empty. But at this time, everyone comes there. So in any case, this gentleman was there. He was a businessman. And while he was at the temple, all of a sudden he got a message that his godowns had caught fire. And a huge amount of material was lying in there, was all burning. So naturally, he went back. He rushed back and he saw that the whole building was up in flames. And the person who told me this story says that there were almost about 2 crores worth of goods lying. The total damage was 2 crores. And this gentleman, he saw that there was nothing to be done because the fire had become so huge. There was no way anything could be salvaged at this time. The fire engine people had been told, and they were coming here at any time. But even if the fire engine people had come, they would not have been able to extinguish it for several hours. And in any case, whatever was to be destroyed would have been destroyed. So what did this gentleman do? He walked back. He went back to the temple and said, at least let me finish my darshan properly and peacefully. And someone said, are you mad? Your house is burning. Your 2 crores worth of property is burning. And you are just going back for darshan? He said, Govinda is providing, Govinda Dev is taking away. So it is not my business. It's his business. When he wants to take away from me, he wants to give me. It's up to him. He is taking away in this fashion, and there is nothing I can do here. The fire is beyond human control at this time. So what is the point in me sitting here and mourning my fate? I should better do something constructive. This has already gone out of hand. I'm not satisfied. I could not finish my morning darshan today. So I want to go back and see Lord Govindadev. So he went back. The fire engine people came, did their work, etc. But he was peaceful. So this is such an inspiring example for all of us, that we understand that the results that come in life are not dependent exclusively on the efforts that you put in here in this life. Of course, they do come from some effort, from some karma, from previous lives. Depending on the kind of activities we have performed in previous lives, we get the reactions in this life. They come in the form of profit, they come in the form of loss, they come in the form of nice customers, they come in the form of nasty customers, they come in the form of customers who pay your bills very timely. They also come in the form of customers who end up as bad debts for you. So all these things are simply controlled by destiny. So one who is wise does not become a plaything or a puppet in the hands of destiny. Rather, like that gentleman, one should rest assured understanding that everything is happening under the dictation of the Supreme Lord. And one should simply move along with the Lord's directions. Whatever the Lord's will, this is a formula for attaining real peace. Accept the will of the Lord in your life. Do not struggle with it. Do not blame the Lord. Do not blaspheme the Lord. Why has the Lord done this to me? Why me? These two words are very common in life. How many of us may not have asked this question? Why me? Why is this happening to me? I am a good person. I am doing everything nicely. There is a story of this King Chitraketu who prayed for a child. He was childless for a long time. Finally, by the mercy of 2 great rishis called Angira Muni and Narad Muni, he got a child. But Angira Muni, when he left, he also cautioned that this child will be called Harsha Shok, because he will give you Harsha or happiness, but he will also give you Shok or misery. This was a veiled, camouflaged warning that be careful. Don't think that because your long cherished desire has now been fulfilled that you are going to be happy. Just like someone who is childless for a long time gets a child, oh, I am so happy. Not necessarily. The unhappiness is going to come very shortly. Just like a poor man, for long years he is poor, suddenly he becomes wealthy. He has been dreaming of becoming wealthy. He becomes wealthy. So he is happy. But no, there is unhappiness in store too. So one should know that even though one's long cherished ambitions and desires may be fulfilled, they may at best bring some temporary pleasure, but they can never bring happiness. But King Chitraketu was not so far-sighted. He said, later on, let us see, if trouble comes, it comes. At least I have a son whom I can fondle. At least I will enjoy the childhood days of the son and get this pleasure. It is a way of this world that when the children grow up, then they don't listen to the parents, they become independent, and it's the way of life, what to do. But very soon, because the other queens of the king became envious, they poisoned this child. The child died. And the queen, the mother of this child, became extremely distraught with grief. She became wailing and screaming in agony. And first of all, when she understood that the child was really dead, the first person she began blaming was who? Not the king. God. How is it that you have become so blind that you're taking away the child of a parent even in the lifetime of the parent? And she went on and on and on. And in this way we understand, even though they were from such a cultured family, they were so knowledgeable, they had been hearing satsangs, their rishis and munis had been visiting their darbar for so many years, but still, that understanding that destiny is inevitable, that destiny must come of its own course, had not still sunk into the queen's mind. Really, when the rishis came back at that moment and they gave some good instruction, they brought the atma of the child back into the body, the child sat up and gave instruction to the mother and father and said, "You are calling me, but which child am I? Who are my real parents? Are the ones who are waiting for me in my next life and for whom you have deprived them the happiness because you have called me back? Are they my parents? Are you my real parents? Or are the parents of my previous life my real parents? I have had so many parents in every life that I have lived in this material world, in different species of life. And in every species, in every birth, I have had mother and father. So who are my real parents?" He gave a wonderful spiritual discourse and explained that how, just as little straws and little twigs, they come together by the waves of a river for a period of time and then separate, never to meet again. Different spirit souls, according to the karma, come together for a while in a certain arrangement as family members, friends, enemies, business associates, and whatever else, and they go away. Sometimes enemies from one previous life are reborn together in the same family to give each other misery, to settle their old accounts by karma. It happens many times. One's own father, son, brother, wife, husband, whatever it may be. And this is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The settling of accounts takes place. It has to take place. So one who is intelligent just understands one should not blame God like that queen did. But when the queen was enlightened, then she understood. So similarly, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to give us enlightenment. To understand that we should be satisfied, to give us enlightenment. To understand that we should be satisfied with what destiny brings in its own wake. So one should act. One should not think that spiritual life is an excuse for laziness or for inaction. One should not also work so hard that one has no time for spiritual life. Because if one is working excessively hard and one is neglecting one's spiritual responsibilities and duties, then it means that one actually does not understand how the law of providence is working and how God acts in this world to give us happiness and distress. So Arjuna here again is misconceiving and is thinking of spiritual life as some form of escapism. And then he continues on in the next verse, airing his confusion. So kindly chant the second verse. We will chant together. Vyamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohayasiva me tadekam vadanishchitya yena shreyoham apnuyam. Translation: my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me? Arjuna is still indecisive. He is still confused about how fighting in the battle can have auspicious results, because he is still thinking in terms of his own intellect, own desires. He doesn't understand that to the extent that our desires are independent of the desires of God, to that extent we will become bewildered. This is a very important point. If you don't have a notebook, please write it in your heart, that any desires independent of the desires of God will only be a cause of bewilderment and suffering. Please write it in your heart in words of fire, so that you are always reminded, so that it always burns in your heart. When we have desires independent of the desires of God, for our own sense gratification, for our own selfish interest, we may think that these things will benefit us, but actually they are going to be the cause of our suffering. Prahlad says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nate viduh swartha gatim hi vishnum durashaya ye bahirarthamaninah andha yathandhe rupaniyamana te pishitantriyam urudam nibaddhah. He says, my dear Lord, he is addressing Lord Narsingadev, who has appeared before him, and he says, my dear Lord, the people in general do not know what their real self-interest is. Swarth, sva-artha. Artha means benefit. Sva means self. They do not know what in wherein lies their real benefit in life. They do not understand surrender to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu is their real swarth. Gatim hi Vishnum. When one surrenders to Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna and becomes his devotee, one is acting for one's real welfare. This is the most beneficial thing we can do in life for ourselves and for the ones we love and for the whole world at large. So, if people are not taking shelter of Lord Krishna, they're not becoming serious devotees of Lord Krishna. Why is that? Durashaya. Because they have all kinds of bad desires in their mind. Desires which have nothing to do with the desires of God, which are independent. Desires for sense gratification. And why do these desires come? Bahir arthamaninah. Because we are attracted by the razzle dazzle of the outside world. And we think, oh, how attractive these things are. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want name, I want fame, I want puja, labh, pratishtha, profit, adoration and distinction. These are the three things that drive a person on this path. When a person is bewildered, he becomes starry-eyed by looking at all the things around him, and then he wants to obtain these things, and then he becomes distracted from the real goal of life. Again, there's a little example I like to quote often, where a devotee came back from Germany and he was sent by his company for some training. So he was narrating some experience, and he was describing one day the toilets in Germany, in many houses that he went to. Those toilets were so elaborate, they were well furnished with all kinds of amenities, including novels, books, magazines, newspapers, television set, and everything except for the toilet. Everything else in the room would have appeared like a bedroom or a study room or some kind of entertainment room. And he said that people spend many times hours inside there. So actually, if you look at it, what is the toilet meant for? Well, we need not discuss. We all know what a toilet is meant for. But when you decorate your toilet with all other things which have no connection with the real purpose of the toilet, then what happens? It is simply a waste of time. And in the end, you may not even accomplish the very purpose for which you have gone, because your mind has got totally distracted. Similarly, in life, especially in the human form of life, one forgets the real purpose for which one has come here. One has obtained a human form of life simply for God realization and not for anything else. God realization is the only purpose of life. But because we do not know that, or we forget that, so then we cover ourselves with so many other things in life that are simply distractions. They distract our mental and intellectual and physical energies away from God realization. And then God realization becomes a subsidiary activity to be done, if at all, only when one has a little bit of time. But the Srimad Bhagavatam says it's completely the opposite. Kamasya nendriya priti labho jiveta yavata jivasya tattva jnyasanartho yascheha karma bhihi. Human life is meant only for tattva jnyasa, only for understanding the absolute truth. All the human intelligence should be geared, focused on this purpose, not for the purpose of gratifying the senses. Na indriya priti labho jiveta, not for the sake of love of our senses, giving pleasure to our tongue, our eyes, our skin, our ears, and so on. So therefore, one must learn to dovetail one's desires with the desires of Krishna. My dear Lord, let thy will be done. This is a statement of the intelligent person, the really wise person. And how does one know the desire of God? By understanding the desires of his devotees. How does one understand the desires of the director of a company? Through his secretary. So like that, the devotees are like the secretaries of God. They transmit his message. The boss may just dictate, okay, you write this letter and send it. Or make this notice, put it up in the company, let all the employees hear. So therefore, Krishna also tells Arjuna, his devotee, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktah pranashyati. Arjuna, you go and declare to the whole world, my devotee will never perish. My devotee is always glorious. That I myself become very indebted to my devotees. That my devotees need not fear. Aham tvam sarva papebhra mokshayishyami ma shuchaha. I will relieve my devotees of all sinful reactions. Tell them, do not fear. My dear Arjuna, you go and tell them. So the devotees, their only business in life is to act like a secretary of Lord Krishna, to broadcast Krishna's message and to transmit messages back to him. So you will often find when devotees talk to each other, they will tell each other, Prabhu, please pray for me, because I know your Krishna will listen to your prayers, because he will not listen to my prayers. I am not a devotee. The devotees, out of humility, think themselves very lowly. But they consider others to be very advanced. So they pray to others. You please pray to Krishna. When Krishna hears your prayer, then he must listen. So in this way, by hearing the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna expresses his desires, by hearing the devotees of the Lord, who are the medium through which Krishna expresses his desires, we can understand what are the desires of God. Then, if we live our life in accordance with the desires or the instructions of the devotees and the Lord, then one can become free from bewilderment and confusion. Now, Lord Krishna will begin answering Arjuna's query about how one can reconcile Buddha Yoga with fighting, with warfare. So we come to text 3. Kindly chant along with me. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Lokesmin Dvividha Nishtha Pura Prokta Mayanaga Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ended by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. In text 39 of the second chapter, Lord Krishna had already explained that there are two kinds of procedures to understand God. One is called Sankhya Yoga, the process of analytically trying to understand and distinguish the permanent from the impermanent. And the other is called Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. We saw when we discussed chapter 2 that Sankhya Yoga is somewhat like trying to find the root of a tree, and Bhakti Yoga is once you have found that root, to water it. So Sankhya Yoga means to understand what is the source of this creation, where has this world come from, what is the ultimate origin of all these things. And by analysis of various kinds, you come to the conclusion that there must be a God. This is intelligence. The perfection of intelligence is to understand that there must be God. The perfection of science also is to come to the conclusion that God exists, and God is supremely intelligent because He has made this creation in such a wonderful way. The creation is an example or of the proof of the existence of God, because of its wonderful the nature it is made in. So, similarly, when one actually tries to understand the source, identifying the source as God is not sufficient. Then one must serve God. Having understood there is a God, what must one do? One must begin to serve Him. So that is called Bhakti Yoga. The two steps are simply rungs in a ladder that come progressively as one progresses in spiritual advancement. But Arjuna's confusion, he thinks of these two processes as two independent processes leading to different destinations, or ultimately even leading to God. But he doesn't understand that the process of understanding God is called yoga. Yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to link, and that yoga is like a ladder. And all these different forms of yoga that Lord Krishna has explained are simply different rungs in the ladder, and that bhakti is the topmost rung in that ladder, which means that all the other forms of yoga, they culminate in and find their perfection in bhakti. So one who is doing bhakti is understood to have already become a yogi in previous lives. There is no need for him to do jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, this yoga and that yoga. He simply serves the Supreme Lord Krishna. But this point has not been understood yet by Arjuna. So Krishna is beginning to explain and clarify this concept. And further in his discussion, Krishna continues on with text 4. So kindly chant text 4 after me.
Nakarmana manarambhan Naishkarmyam purushoshnute Nacha sanyasana deva Siddhim samadhi gacchati.
In this verse, Krishna is condemning inaction or laziness. Translation by Srila Prabhupada: not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Very important point. You see, some people who are intelligent, thoughtful, they may think, I perform action, that action may be good or bad, but I receive a reaction which may be good or bad. And this action-reaction process binds me in the cycle of birth and death. Because I have performed reactions, I must receive the reactions, but sometimes death may come and interrupt the process. So at the time of death, there may be many actions for which I have not yet received the reaction. So then I have to be born again simply to receive the reactions of my past karma. So the thoughtful person thinks, well, I perform karma, I get good or bad reactions, these reactions force me to take birth again, and this cycle continues, and this is called samsara chakra, the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, I am bound in the cycle of birth and death, which is the cause of my suffering. Therefore, in order to avoid this repetition of cycle of birth and death, I should not be born again. In order for me to be not born again, I should not have any reactions left. And the only way I cannot have any reactions left is to not perform the action. If there is no action, then no reaction. Nowadays, action-reaction is very much in the news. So anyway, if I don't perform any action, then there will be no reaction. So therefore, I should just not perform any activity. If I don't perform activity, then no sins. But Lord Krishna negates this idea here. He says that do not think that simply by abstaining from work that you can achieve freedom from reaction. Because even abstaining from work is a kind of work. It's also a kind of karma. Suppose a businessman says, I won't do any business, I will just sleep. The housewife says, I will not do any work in the house, I will just sleep because it brings this reaction. But that sleeping is also an action. The so-called inaction is also an action. So one who likes to sleep a lot, by virtue of that action which he thinks is inaction, will make that person take birth probably as a bear. Because a bear can sleep for 6 months, comfortably, naturally. That is what the bear's body is designed for. So then one can comfortably sleep, but human body is not meant for that. So therefore Lord Krishna says, Na karmanam anarambhan, naishkarmyam purusho ashnute. Karmanam anarambhan. So someone says, no karma for me, I will not act at all. So he says, na naishkarmyam, you will not receive freedom from reaction because you think you are not acting. Reaction will come. So better work. And secondly, he says, na cha sanyasanat eva siddhim samadhi gacchati. If somebody is frustrated with life, life brings in its wake so many miseries and so many problems, and he says, okay, let me give up all this and let me take sannyas. Which is what Arjuna wanted to do. Arjuna was very distraught with the idea that he has to perform his duty as a kshatriya and that will involve killing his family members. The thought was horrible for him. He said, better to take sannyas. He was going all set to go into the Himalayas and then Krishna said no. So Krishna is saying here, na cha sannyasanadeva siddhim samadhi gacchati. By taking sannyas, it is not that you will achieve siddhi or perfection. So renouncing activity, renouncing your prescribed duties, but going to the renounced order of life, sannyas life, is not the answer either. So Lord Krishna has made it very clear here. Last time also we briefly discussed, if someone gives up one wife to take sannyas, but his senses and mind are not controlled, what is the use? Because he's carrying 6 wives with him when he goes into the forest. What are those 6 wives? The mind and the senses. The 5 senses and the mind. 6 co-wives whom he will have to serve when he goes into the forest. So therefore being such a sannyasi has no meaning. There's no real benefit. So why is it that by merely abstaining from work when one cannot achieve freedom from reaction? And why is it that by taking sannyas alone one cannot achieve perfection? That answer Lord Krishna gives in the next verse, where we are told that inactivity is not an option. You have to act. And why is it that you have to act? Let us see what Lord Krishna says in text number 5.
Nahi kaschit kshanamapi. Jatu tishthatya karma kret. Karyate yavashah karma. Sarva prakritir jairgunehi.
Translation. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So what is the answer? The answer is given here. And the answer is that your inactivity is not an option for us because by nature we are active. You cannot become inactive because it is against your basic nature. Yes, there are some people who are influenced by the three modes of material nature, sattva gun, rajagun, tamagun, and they act in different ways. So the manner of your acting may be different. The person in tamagun, he likes to sleep a lot, he likes to go to the liquor bar, he likes to take drugs and intoxicants, he is always foul-mouthed, he is unclean, he is lazy, so he acts in that way. The person who is in rajagun is always eager and working hard for material enjoyment. For him, profit, adoration, distinction are things to achieve in life. Formula for success and happiness in life. Such a person wants money. He wants all the good things that money can buy in life. He wants the prestige and the fame and name that goes with it. And he is always enjoyment oriented. So his actions are of a certain nature. The person in sattva guna is more or less calm and peaceful and contented. He is not much interested in struggling hard beyond what is reasonably required. And he is satisfied by what providence brings. He doesn't get agitated. He is happy living a peaceful, contented life and understands that there is something higher in life to achieve. So all three are acting in different ways according to their conditioning. Conditioning means habit. Jaisa sang, vaisa rang. There is a saying in India, according to your association, you will act. Those who associate with tamagun act in that way. Those who associate with rajagun and sattvagun act in that way. So because the atma has been associating with these gunas, therefore the living entity acts in these different ways. So the activities will go on. And even apart from the body, it is a soul that is by nature active. The soul cannot be free from activity. The inherent nature of the soul is to act. The only choice that we have is to act for the pleasure of Lord Krishna or to try to act for our own pleasure. When we try to act for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, we obtain real pleasure. When we try to act for our own pleasure, we only end up getting misery. See this irony, the contradiction. So one who wants real happiness in life will cease to act for his or her pleasure. He or she will act only for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. One has to be real intelligent even to enjoy. One has to be really wise to know what is real happiness. Prahlad says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the only enjoyment you can have on a material platform is in your dream. Oh, I'm Sachin Tendulkar, or I'm Amitabh Bachchan, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Yes. So long as you're only dreaming, that's your only happiness. Once you try to translate that action, dream into reality and try to work hard practicing cricket and you find you can't be like Sachin Tendulkar, then you will suffer. So whatever one may try to dream of and all the kinds of happiness that we may dream, the happiness is restricted there. When we translate into action, then it brings suffering. Because we want to work for our own pleasure. But the devotees of the Lord are very intelligent. Not for nothing they are giving up the pleasures of this world. Are all the great persons, saintly persons of the past so many millions of years, were they foolish that they gave up all the pleasures of this world if they didn't receive something higher? It is obviously that they received something much superior to the pleasures of this world. Therefore, they gave up the lower pleasures of this world. So therefore, one must work only for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. And in this way, the activity, the choice of activity must be determined by us. We have two choices: to serve Krishna or to serve Krishna's illusory energy, which is called Maya. We will discuss more about the consequences of these things next Saturday, and we will continue with Lord Krishna's description of what Karma Yoga is all about. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. The same as Bhakti Yoga. Yes and no. There are levels of Karma Yoga. One could perform Karma Yoga by working without attachment to the fruits. At the very simplest level, that is Karma Yoga. I am not attached to the fruits of my action. But that Karma Yoga is not perfect because I don't know to whom the fruits belong. I just say that this is not mine. The fruits of my action are not mine. But then whose are they? That is Bhakti. They belong to Lord Krishna. So then I offer those fruits to Him. So that is more active, the higher form of Karma Yoga. Yajñārthāt karmaṇo anyatra lokoyam karma bandhana. Tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. When we work for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna, we become released. We will discuss more of this as we go along in the discussion in Karma Yoga next time and further on. But suffice it to say that bhakti is activity done exclusively according to the will of the Lord for His pleasure alone. In Karma Yoga, there is scope for some personal desire. I may perform some activity of my choice and then offer the fruits of that reaction to Krishna. But in Bhakti Yoga, I perform activities of Krishna's choice, not of my choice. That is the distinction.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe. Jaya Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Jagannatha, Jagannatha, Baladeva Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaur Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaur Hari Bol.